Welcome back to In the Box here on TSN 1200. Graham Creech, Chris Stevenson, Cam Clement, your crew today. Let's go to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Welcome in The Athletic's Ian Mendez. Trey, good afternoon. How are you?
Guys, what happens when it's CJ, Creech, and Cam? Do you guys have like a 3C nickname or something going?
Well, I don't want to go with triple C. That's a, there's this UFC guy that's retired that might come back, and he goes by triple C, and I hate him. He's like the most cringeworthy guy in the sport. So I don't want to go triple C.
C-cubed?
You would be the guy to come up with a name, though.
Yes. We'll leave that with you.
Okay. You leave it with me. That just came to me as you welcome people back and said it was the three of you. But, happy to be with you guys.
Yeah, happy to have you. And I know this is a few days old now, but let's start by giving you an opportunity to weigh in on the Troy Mann firing. I know that you've hit on it in your latest for The Athletic, your mailbag. And I've always said I love a good mailbag, Ian. But after you've had a few days to kind of reflect and I'm sure do some digging and stuff, what was your initial reaction at 10:38 p.m. on last Thursday, and how do you view the situation now?
Yeah, listen, I was surprised, and I think it was Patrick Williams who does a great job. He writes, kind of covers the NHL and the AHL, and he had the note on Friday of last. It was either Thursday or Friday of last week, saying this is only the third time an AHL coach has been fired in the middle of the season, basically in the last 12 years, without a promotion being attached to it. So, for example, Ottawa, just to put this into Ottawa context, Ottawa fans will remember that, you know, the Senators, you know, one year they fired their coach and they brought in Corey Kluston, right? Midway through, Hartsburg was out, Kluston came in. That's the more typical change you see when an AHL coach is elevated mid-season. Well, that obviously would necessitate a change. You very rarely see an AHL-coached coach terminated mid-season. And I think my initial reaction at the time was, man, is this deja vu? This feels like one of those classic, take you back 4 or 5 years ago when there was, you know, it felt like mysterious disappearances were commonplace around here, where somebody would get fired or terminated and leave under kind of odd circumstances. And here I sit, 5 days later, and I know, CJ, you're very close to following Belleville and the happenings there, and I'm sure maybe you're as kind of perplexed as I am now 5 days later. Like, listen, on the surface, we can absolutely take them at face value and say, like, listen, it was a communication issue. It the timing of it felt odd to me, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm always open to being wrong, but it felt like firing somebody right after a game, whether or not they won, I think doesn't matter. But when there was a natural pause in the schedule coming up, like what was it that was so pressing that required a termination, before they played again on Saturday? That's the question I have. I don't know. I don't believe Troy Mann has spoken publicly to anybody as of this time, and maybe he'll shed some light on it. I saw Ryan Bonus's availability. I think he said as much as he could, as he felt comfortable saying. But I'm left wanting a little bit more here. The pieces don't add up to me. And again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was just, hey, this guy, your team is struggling and we want to make a move. It just, felt a little bit odd to me. That's all.
Well, team struggling, I look at as him getting the most out of a depleted roster that he's had for the last couple of years because of call-ups and injuries. We were going through, what was it, Graham, eight goalies last year, five this year, I think.
And it was either the year before, the last 2 years before this one, it was 7 1 year, 8 1 year.
Yeah.
I don't remember which year was which, but and then five this year.
Yeah, and I mentioned that Jack Miller, the longtime Belleville broadcaster, pointed out that the leading the league in player transactions for the last couple of, 200 player transactions, that it just seems like if you're going to assess the job that Troy Mann has done, and number one on the list is how have your prospects performed? Well,
yeah.
I would say Nick Paul, success story. I would say Drake Batherson, success story. I mean, go down the list of guys that have been down there and have come up, and everybody seemed to be, you know, even in the case of a Ridley Gregg coming up this year, saying that, geez, the kid looks like he's ready to play in the NHL. And, you know, I think you have to give Troy Mann a good portion of the credit for that. Kastelic, Parker Kelly, I mean, whatever you think of those guys, they've come in and shown they can be regular NHLers. With, you know, I saw some people bring up Jacob Bernard, Doctor, Lassie Thompson. My thing would be like, you know what, maybe these guys just aren't as good as they thought they were. So when I look at the job that he's done developing players, I have to give him a more than passing grade on that front. And to your point, that's why it just feels like this one, there's more going on beneath the surface here than I think what we're led to believe, and just a difference of philosophy or systems between Belleville and Ottawa, which was kind of hinted at, I guess more than hinted at, was given as the reason in the press release. So these things typically over time wind up coming out. Everybody seems to be pretty tight-lipped at this point, but I think we'll ultimately get the story.
Yeah, exactly, and that's one of those things. I think sometimes we live in an era where when a story breaks and something happens, I think people want immediate answers.
Of course.
And it's our job as well to kind of try and push for the truth and find out what happened. And unfortunately, sometimes the wheels of truth move at a slower pace than we'd all like, and that includes me. But all we can do is try and find out what happened there. And listen, again, it felt atypical. It felt odd. When you look at it through the lens of how often does an AHL coach lose his job in the middle of the season? And the answer is that's the third time in 12 years. So in the entire, you know, AHL. So that's it shows you that it's pretty rare. And, you know, it makes you wonder, okay, what happened? What was the definitive breaking point that forced it to happen at that particular juncture?
Right.
And again, like you said, CJ, he's done a really good job. You go through the list of Josh Norris, Batherson, Nick Paul, I know he's not part of the organization right now, Alex Formanton. There's a number of players that came through Nick Paul. I mean, the only one you would look back and say, like, man, I don't think he worked out was Logan Brown, but I think that's not because of the coaching style. That just felt like that was just never going to fit.
It's not fitting in St. Louis right now either.
No, exactly. So I think that would be the one first-round pick you'd look back and say, like, yeah, I don't know if that worked out. But really, beyond that, I think for the most part, he's developed these players exactly in the trajectory you would have wanted them to. And listen, go back and look at Nick Paul, the year he was the Masterton nominee in 2021. Go back and read his quotes. And when we interviewed him for the Masterton Trophy, the guy that he gave all the credit to was Troy Mann, that he was at a very low point in his, not only his professional life, his personal life, where he was struggling mentally, and he felt like Troy Mann pushed the right buttons. And look at the contract Nick Paul signed, a 7-year. Imagine going back 3 years ago and telling Nick Paul, you're going to sign a 7-year contract with a perennial Stanley Cup champion. He probably wouldn't have believed it, but obviously Troy believed in him. And so I think he's done a good job. I'm sure he'll get another opportunity somewhere. He's got a very, a very credible, solid resume in the American Hockey League.
And,
I suspect he'll get another chance to coach somewhere. He was a guy. I think the Marlies, you probably know this, CJ, I think the Toronto Marlies were pretty hot after him. In the past, thinking like this is the guy we'd like in our farm system.
Yeah.
I think he won't be out of a job for too long. And like you said, we'll probably get to the truth at some point down the road.
Ian Mendez of The Athletic is our guest. Ian, over the All-Star break or All-Star weekend, Gary Bettman stated that 15 parties express interest to purchase the Ottawa Senators. What more can you share in terms of the process and when Sens fans can kind of expect some more news on the sale of the team?
Yeah, and this is another one where I think CJ has been really, you've been pretty locked in on this too, the last, 2 months or so in kind of looking at this. And the feeling I get is that the bids are going to start coming in. If it's not this week, it might be next week. And I think my understanding is you're going to get a chance to bid multiple times. Like, it's not just, okay, your best bid, and then they're going to take the 6 or 7 bid, whatever they end up getting, and just take it. I think it's almost going to be like a little bit of an auction process, from what I gather. But I'll say this, and I've written this for a year and a half, and I'll say it again. Gary Bettman is going to be the guy that really dictates the terms of the sale, who ends up ultimately with the team, what that purchase price is going to be, all of the things. So as much as we'd like to think that, wow, there's, you know, and Gary said 15 parties are interested, and let's even say that out of that 15, six are serious bidders, and then it gets down to two or three. As much as we'd like to think this is going to become an aggressive bidding process, and I'm sure to some extent it is, if Gary Bettman has a particular owner that he wants in place, I think that's going to be the person that essentially assumes control of the team. Now, granted, that they're going to have to reach a price point that that they're comfortable with, right? And I think that's the really important thing. Like, remember, when Seattle got its expansion fee of $650, a lot of people thought, well, okay, well, that's going to be like the floor price for Ottawa. Like, if you're going to sell, or Nashville, or these teams that were, you know, maybe on the market, that, okay, well, that they're saying $650 because they want $650 to be the new entry point. Well, I think the Pittsburgh Penguins price of $900 is the one. Like I've always said, you split the difference between Seattle and Pittsburgh, and maybe even inch it a bit closer to Pittsburgh, that's where Ottawa's going to come in. I have felt that for a long, long time. I've always felt, for about 3 or 4 years, I was very much an advocate of, there are multiple people that would buy this team and keep them in Ottawa. I never bought into the narrative of this team was in danger of moving or anything like that. So I think we're going to see that process come to its fruition here. And my guess is you're going to see a conditional sale between, like, probably like almost like the trade deadline. Not that the trade deadline has anything to do with it per se, but like kind of, let's say March 1st and the end of the regular season. And then when the conditional sale happens, I believe they don't take like full control of the team. So it's not like they're going to come in and automatically start saying, let's do this and that. There's going to be a little bit of a period of, okay, they're going to slowly transition them in, and we're going to make sure then that I know it's got to get approved by 3/4 of the Board of Governors, which I think will be essentially a formality. At that point, like I said, Gary is going to have done the vetting. There's not going to be any, I don't think, any resistance.
Yeah, that would probably happen in June at the the Board of Governors meetings, so around the draft. Yep.
The question, though, becomes is, you know, at what point do they start? Do they make changes? How does that all work out? That's going to be the interesting thing. And I think it's going to kind of line up with the end of the regular season / into the playoffs, and then we'll see. But yeah, I think we'll see a conditional sale of this team at some point, you know, next month or into early April.
I think what's also interesting in that with the conditional status and that window that they might have between kind of winning the bidding, and I agree with you about it being an auction. They want to maximize the amount of money here. So if it's not the preferred candidate, and the preferred candidate might be, you know, $50 million behind what the top offer was, that's kind of like one of those little nudge, raise your offer by $50 million and it's yours type thing. So they're going to use whatever leverage they can to maximize the price for sure. But I think the thing about your conditional thought is they need to get negotiating with the NCC. And that's a massive part. And some people might say, like, well, if the Penguin went for $900, how is it possible Ottawa could go for more? It's because of LeBreton Flats. Like, that there's an opportunity there that was not present in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, you were getting the team in the rink. This opens up a whole other realm of financial possibilities with the development of a new rink and some area down there in LeBreton Flats. So that's how Ottawa, little old Ottawa, could wind up being spoken of in the same breath as the mighty Pittsburgh Penguins. So, yeah, I think your $900 million figure, from what I've been hearing lately, might be the starting point.
Yeah, and don't forget, too, that they're sitting on the land in Kanata, which I believe is about 75 acres. And some really, really dialed-in, smart real estate people have told me that right now, based on even though we've seen now, obviously, I think residential, that home market has kind of plateaued, if not, regressed. Commercial real estate continues to be at a premium, and that it's over $1 million per acre. Like, wow. The ballpark figure I've been told is that whole, just the land in Canada is probably worth $100 million. Or, yeah. you know, even if you lowballed it at $80 million, that's a significant amount of money. And that yeah. you fold that into the price of the franchise. That, yep. Yes, you're getting LeBreton.
That's a good point.
Or the rights of the, you're also getting about $100 million. And who knows what they're going to, they could turn that. And like, and that's another fun debate to have for another day. Like, what do you do with Canadian Tire Centre, let's say 5 years from now, if they're at LeBreton? Like, do you turn that into commercial space? Do you turn that into housing? Like, what do you do with that? There's so many options. But remember, that would be under their umbrella. They yeah. would have control of that.
And yeah, look at the residential in that area now, ooh. The way it's sprung up compared to when we used to go out to the rink. I mean, there's houses almost right up to the door now.
Yeah, exactly. So you got to factor that in too, that's a real estate play. And I think that almost every group that is, a serious bidder at this stage of the game have some sort of real estate yes. connection now, yep. right? Into yep. to different real estate entities in the city that are looking at this as a really interesting real estate play. And the other thing, though, I want to squeeze in about not to turn this into a real estate segment, but, you know, that land at LeBreton is only big, it's I think 7.5 acres roughly. It's not big enough for the vision of LeBreton that initially was there in 2016 with like all sorts of a mix of commercial and residential yep. and retail, all that. So what I think is whatever the group is that wins the bid, they're going to have to kind of go. I wouldn't be shocked if they circle back to the NCC and say, can we add another, can we double this? Can we get a little bit more? And I'm not saying that that's going to be enough to submarine the deal. But I think that if you want to truly monetize this and you're looking at this as a real estate play, you need more real estate. Yeah. It's not a big enough footprint. I've been told there's enough room for an arena and maybe like one hotel or one condo, and that's it. Like, there's not room for the you know, if you think of Columbus or some of these other arena districts that have a downtown feel that are like with like kind of ancillary restaurants and bars. Yeah. There's not the room for that right now.
Ian, really appreciate your time. Is there anything you got coming up? It's the week off for the Sens, a return to action on Saturday. Anything you want to plug with the Athletic, or are you just taking some downtime? What's going on this week?
Gonna take some downtime. I'm gonna have some stuff I've got in the bank that'll run this week, so that our readers don't kind of go 4 or 5 days without Senators content. So yeah, I got some hopefully fun and interesting columns here coming up the rest of the week, and that's about it.
Nice. Always appreciate the time. Work on that nickname for CJ, Cam, and I.
C-cubed. Yeah.
Thanks, Ian.
All right, guys. Thanks. Have a good one. Thanks for having me.